Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Got that right, Mr. Blue Sky. It is a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. A little bit later in the program, Louis Lazar will be here. You know, Louis writes a lot about transportation for the Chicago Business Journal and tourism as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Southwest Airlines contract. I think they just had their annual meeting not too long ago. Everything's rosy except for the fact that they don't seem to have contracts for their pilots and mechanics and flight attendants. We'll get the latest on that from Lewis. A little bit later, Dr. Lee Sachs, he's the chief medical officer, the top doc at Advocate Healthcare. You know, they just announced that they're moving into Walgreens Clinic. So I want to talk to him about the future of the doctor's office and whether or not the doctor soon will be, you know, across from the Pringle aisle in the Walgreens. It's Dr. Lee Sachs coming up a little bit later. But we're going to lubricate ourselves first with a glass of wine, tailored wines. Rachel Portell is here, and she is the person, the brain behind that particular business. Rachel, bring that microphone a little bit closer to you. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
How does it feel to be a brainchild? How do you feel? I mean, the business has been growing. It's been seems to be growing pretty quickly over the past few years. Are you enjoying it?
I am, yep. The highs definitely come with the lows in entrepreneurship, but enjoying the ride thoroughly.
Well, I want to talk about what the business is, but you brought it up. So what's the high? Where do you get the high?
Oh, man, hitting sales goals, making people happy when they drink the wine, anytime something positive happens, coming on the radio.
Well, I'm glad to provide a high for you. How about the low? What's the low?
When the bank account starts to run low, or you miss a deadline, or you're putting out 500 fires.
So you tend to think of people who create their own businesses as being, you know, charging ahead, not dwelling on the bank account and all of that, but that's probably an unrealistic view.
Well, no, I definitely don't dwell on it. You can't dwell on it, but there are the days when, you know, there's 500 fires you're putting out, and it kind of sucks.
Let's go back to the very beginning. Tailored wine. So you're on a trip to you've done some work in the wine business.
Mm-hmm.
You're out to Napa Valley. You find a very nice, tasty wine that you love. You buy some there. You come back here, and you can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, even before I got back here, the winemakers were complaining that they weren't able to get their wines to the Chicago market because they knew I worked in the industry.
Right.
And to me, the red flag, something must be wrong. These wines are fantastic. Why aren't they making it to the market? So.
And we can blame Prohibition?
We can blame Prohibition.
Really?
That
I
is
love
correct.
That.
Yes.
Explain that.
So after Prohibition, the government wanted to make the wine industry purposefully inefficient in order to keep people from over-drinking was...
After Prohibition. Okay.
So Prohibition killed a lot of the wineries, but then after, the laws they put in place coming out of Prohibition to keep people from
getting
too drunk.
They were like speed bumps.
Yes.
Okay.
And those are still in place today.
That's
this many
amazing
years
to
later.
Me. Because they still believe in them, or people just never bothered to repeal them?
They never bothered to repeal them because big business sprouted up around it, and now people lobby to keep them in place so they can continue to make their money.
And what we're talking about is the fact that, like, a winery in California can't sell directly to a restaurant in Chicago.
Correct.
And so you had the idea of becoming the middleman.
Absolutely.
And so you're helping these small wineries in California and Oregon and elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
and you're helping restaurants in Chicago sort of expand their palate in a way.
Yeah, so we've transitioned away from working with the restaurants. That was the initial idea, and it was exciting, but it's better for us to go straight to the consumers.
Sure.
It's better for the wineries as well. So
but you did that. That was your entry.
That was the entry, correct.
Yeah.
Helping. So what would happen is if the wineries made it to Chicago, they would sit in warehouses. So we were basically helping the restaurant buyers know what small, amazing
right.
wineries were in the market.
It's kind of nice because you're helping. I mean, you've sort of found gold, and now you're helping other people discover it who wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're still doing now in the latest sort of incarnation.
Absolutely, yep.
Tell me about that.
So we opened up our marketplace to the general public because people were asking where they could find these amazing wines. And the laws have loosened in a sense that now a winery can sell direct to a consumer.
Not in every state, though, right?
Not in every right. state. In a lot, increasingly. I mean, I think there's only like 8 or 9 now that you can't sell into.
Okay.
So it's increasingly beneficial for the direct-to-consumer piece.
So I would imagine the winery could do that on its own, but why do they need you, or where do you come in on this?
So these wineries are very small production, family-owned operations, and they don't have the teams to do the marketing and get out and let people taste the wine. So what we've done is curate what we feel is the best collection on our website, and then I use my marketing background to help
them. So you've sort of created a boutique wine shop, a virtual boutique wine shop.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
As a fun?
I mean, I love it. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. Yeah.
And so tell me the name of the website and how people can find it.
It's Taylored, T-A-Y-L-O-R-E-D, wines, W-I-N-E-S.com.
And you just started selling to the consumer in February?
February, yeah, brand new.
And how's it going?
It's going well. We have sold into 15 states, increasing traction every month, and it's fun to get the feedback on how much people like the wines.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, it's... I'm not a big connoisseur of wine. I mean, I certainly enjoy it. But a little bit later, we're going to talk to Louis Lazar about men's clothing and these new stores that are where you can order clothes online only, right? And now they're getting bricks and mortars where you can go and try on the clothes and then order it online, sort of a move. And maybe that translates into buying wine as well. Can people taste the wine first, or how do people decide what they want to order online when it comes to wine, especially if it's a wine that they don't widely know?
Yeah, so that's been not a trick, but first we host parties. So I'll host my friends or their friends and allow them to taste the wines that I love. So that's been a great conduit of people going online.
It's much more fun than a Tupperware party.
Yeah, it's a much better Tupperware party. And then on top of that, we're building a recommendation engine so that you can come on and tell us what sort of flavors you enjoy,
right,
and then we'll virtually guide you to the right wines.
You know, the more I think of it, the more I realize it was a silly question, because when I go to a liquor store or Whole Foods or whatever, I'm still just buying on the description or the label.
Right.
Right, if I like the picture on the label, which is probably not the best way to buy wine.
A lot of people do it that way, though.
How do you suggest people buy a bottle of wine or choose a bottle of wine?
So the descriptions are typically best. I actually advocate against the scores, unless you know that your palate happens to be the same as the person rating the wine. So I recommend looking at the descriptors, seeing if it's flavors you like. Do you like really bright red cherry, or would you prefer to bite into a blackberry?
Right.
Do you like chocolate, or do you like smoking a cigar? So figuring out what you really like and then writing down as you taste wines and just keeping that in mind.
Yeah, the score is sort of like a movie critic, right? If you don't like the movie critic, it doesn't matter how the critic scores the wine.
Correct.
Rachel Portell, Taylored Wines. It was great to meet you, and I love seeing not just the business that grows with a great idea, but one that then sort of adapts and moves in different directions, and that's where you are right now.
It is.
Continued success.
Thank you so much.
Love to have you back.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720. It's 1222. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here, and it is a beautiful Thursday afternoon. The weather's nice, but it's beautiful, too, because Louis Lazar is in the studio, writes for the Chicago Business Journal. Louis, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to talk about the way you've been dressing lately.
If we must.
But not right away. Let's start with Southwest Airlines. You write a lot about transportation there. And I was interested in a piece you wrote. Boy, it looks like they're just doing great in every way except their union contracts.
That is the big sticking point. And Gary Kelly, who's been in the CEO position for 12 years now, and that's been his one big obstacle, is getting new labor contracts with his key unions, the flight attendants, the pilots, and the mechanics. All three have been negotiating for four or more years now, and it's, you know, the unions are fed up, quite frankly.
Did they have their annual meeting here in Chicago?
For the first time in 45 years.
He said last year was very gratifying. Record traffic, record revenue, record profits, and record stock dividend, among other things. Southwest has grown its quarterly dividend 20-fold over the past 5 years. That's your writing.
Right.
So why can't he get a union contract?
Well, I think he's very nervous about, you know, he has to look long-term at what the future of the airline industry is going to be. And because oil happens to be cheap now, everything is rosy. But he's got to walk a delicate line here about getting contracts that don't end up putting the airline in a precarious position. If oil spikes, and everyone believes it will, it's just a question of when, not if.
So you don't want to give away too much.
Exactly.
But you want to have them under your wing,
right,
so to speak.
So, I mean, I think he's got to come. There was an incredible display of labor solidarity yesterday. 500 pilots marching up and down South Michigan Avenue. I mean, it was pretty impressive. So I think things are going to start to move here. He's meeting with the pilots on June 7th, and I think there will be some movement in the near future.
I remember when Herb Kelleher had his introductory news conference in Chicago. I was at that news conference.
Really?
Yeah. And Midway Airport.
Okay.
For some reason. And
you were there.
I was there.
Okay.
And because he made a joke about he was good at projectile vomiting, which was vintage Herb Kelleher, right? He's this bombast and everything.
Well, I never met the man personally or had any direct dealings with him, but I gather he's a very different entity, as most of the employees will tell you, from what Mr. Kelly is, who comes from the financial end of it. He was an accountant and then moved in up the ranks.
That's kind of my question. So because when under the Kelleher era, it seemed like everybody was happy or everyone pretended they were happy.
Of course, it was a different airline industry then, and in Southwest was a very small player. Now they're one of the four largest airlines. In fact, they are the largest in terms of number of passengers boarded in the country. So it's a much different, bigger brings with it all kinds
of
complications.
Sure, so you could afford to be a little loosey-goosey
exactly.
when you were the new
kid. And it played perfectly to creating an image of Southwest that a lot of people still sort of think of.
Yeah, Herb Kelleher, I'll never forget that day. Okay, so let's go shopping for some men's clothes, because here we're going to go from Southwest. And okay. You wrote a piece about trying on bathing suits at this
Among other items. Please, let's not focus on the bait.
No. But at this place, Bonobos.
Right.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
But I actually have Bonobos. Yes,
okay.
I think that is the preferred pronunciation. Although many people do Bonobos, but it's Bonobos.
Interesting thing, though, because it was an online store that is sort of, in a way, moving bricks and mortar, but only as a sort of a showroom. Explain that for me.
Well, exactly. Their version is you go to the showroom because he and a number of other men's retailers are convinced men need to feel in touch and try on
exactly.
stuff before they want to commit to a purchase. So these showrooms, you go in, you try on everything, see the range of colors, and they put in the order in the showroom, and it's delivered to you 2 to 5 days, usually on the shorter end of that. But
interesting,
everything
thing.
Is definitely delivered to your house.
So they have all the full line of clothing there
right.
in the full line of sizes.
Right.
They just don't have two or three of them that you
right.
can walk
They're
out
not
with.
Enough to allow you to take the stuff home
and
from the store.
This is their second shop in Chicago?
The second. They have one up on Armitage Avenue, a much smaller one. This one is much more impressive in terms of the size. There's much more you can actually turn around, and it's much a much pleasanter
yeah.
experience.
I think I said shop or store, but you refer to them, or they call them guide shops.
Guide shops, because it's not a store in the sense you can take the stuff
right
there, buy it, and take it home.
So
with
it's
you.
Sort of like the trunk club, but you get to try the clothes on first.
Yeah, well, the trunk club is not quite as evolved yet, I think. I mean, they've sort of been going at a slower pace since Nordstrom bought out trunk club last year.
And the shop right next to it is one called Untuck It, which credits its popularity to a wonderful product, but radio
Absolutely.
Advertising.
Absolutely. You took
this.
The words right out of my mind. I mean, I sat there and listened to this as a gentleman who co-founded the company, and I mean, he couldn't say enough kind words about radio and the impact that can have on a retailer like himself. He said when they started out in New York, they very smartly positioned ads on certain radio stations, and they could just sit there and see the sales spike.
Nice. And so this is a line of shirts that's made to be worn untucked.
Very carefully. They did lots of focus groups, lots of research.
It has
before
to do with
the
length
the
of the shirt.
It has to do with the length, cutting just right where the pocket is on the jean. I've never thought about it, because I frankly don't wear a lot
right.
out. I might start trying it now, because he's a good salesman. He sort of convinced me this might be a look I should try. But
Untuck It, it's called. And you can watch the video of you at Bonobos at bizjournals.com, right?
Right.
Good to see you again.
All right.
I can't wait till the next. You seem like wearied. Did I beat you down?
No. It's just the thought of swimsuits. I don't think we're quite there in the Chicago climate cycle yet.
I'm glad you made it by. I can't wait for the next time, Lewis.
All right.
This
thanks.
Is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. John Byrne is in the studio as well, one of the co-hosts of the Monday Morning Marketing Podcast, which you can hear at WGNplus.com. Welcome to the Business Lunch, John.
Thanks for having me.
I was just going to make some sort of video crack, but, you know, we actually are. You can watch us online at WGNRadio.com.
You wave to the camera over
right.
there.
And I suppose I could Periscope you right now or live video you on Facebook. Or
Yes, you could, and I hope you don't.
if I Periscoped you right, that would be on Twitter. They own Periscope.
No, I think Twitter is Moments, isn't it?
Moments? Who knows? All I know is that when the presidential campaign started, it was about the time Periscope and these things got a big push, and everyone said, oh, it's going to change the way campaigns are run. Well, maybe it would have had Donald Trump not come along. I mean, maybe that, well, really, maybe
we can only take one disruptive influence per campaign,
I think
right?
That's it. But it really hasn't had the live streaming hasn't had a big impact on politics the way people had predicted it would.
Well, I think part of it is that you think about it, and I think of it sort of as a marketer too, but how interesting is everyday life, right? You know?
Well, speak for yourself, buddy.
Well, there's a famous quote that said, drama is life with all the uninteresting parts taken out.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, so there's a, and if you're broadcasting live, let's face it, sometimes people just are not that interesting.
No.
Hopefully we're interesting
I
right now.
I think we are. But right, so you can be watching something, although I also get drawn into it sometimes, where you can be watching something for 45 minutes to wait for the 10 seconds that, you know, is especially relevant.
Right. And again, depends on the medium, right? We sit down and we watch a TV show, Game of Thrones, whatever. And, you know, the best part is, like you said, the last 45 right. seconds. Meanwhile, you've, you know, gone around the entire Westeros kingdoms, you know?
Yeah, they need sunshine there. They need more sunshine on that show. I'm kind of backing into this, but we're talking about the use of video and marketing
right.
and how important it is now. And you brought up a great statistic about how rarely videos are listened to on Facebook. Explain
right.
it for me.
Right. So the statistic is, and it goes across multiple platforms, but it's basically around 80 to 90%, somewhere in there, maybe a smidge less depending on the actual platform. But as you're looking through and scrolling through your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed or whatever, and a video starts autoplaying, which they do,
right.
the sound is turned off. And if you're sitting at work, not working, or if you're sitting at home at the dinner table, or if you're just on a bus or a DL or whatever, you don't want the sound on because you don't want people looking at you. Half the time, you might not even be able to hear it anyway because of other sounds. And so you watch the video silent. We've gone back like 100 years.
It's like Charlie Chaplin, you write.
That's right.
So if you're producing video for marketing reasons, I would imagine you should write it soundless, or, I mean, write it to be effective without sound.
Well, so it's interesting. There's a couple different things that I've seen people do, but definitely, you know, looking for the captured image that just gets people's attention, and then maybe you do other images that are very easy to follow and kind of get your message across. The other part of it, which I didn't talk about before when we were prepping, was closed captioning.
So, automatic closed captioning.
Yeah. I mean, people are adding those to videos sometimes. So, I mean, you know, not the cute cat videos, obviously, because there's, you know, who cares?
Right.
But if you have a talking head, you don't need to necessarily be able to hear it to understand what's going on.
Even if you have a dramatic story or something.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could use closed captioning to get people to click on the audio.
Yep.
Right, to sort of compel them to do it.
Yeah, and it autoplays in frame, too.
How effective is video? I'm trying to phrase my question correctly because my son was in the state tournament gymnastics last week.
Okay.
And he did the vault, and I recorded him on my phone vertically.
Vertically, another thing we'll talk about in a second, probably.
And I posted it on Facebook. And, you know, I have a lot of followers on Facebook. I'm grateful that I do. But after a day or two, it had had almost 2,000 views.
That's a lot.
Now, I know the 2,000 people didn't sit down and say, I want to watch this video, right? But when it comes up on their wall, it
right.
fires automatically.
Yep.
And that counts as a view. So that does, if I'm a marketer, that's not a very effective view or a very effective measurement.
Well, it depends because as you're scrolling, you know, the Facebook algorithm, part of it is they show you what they think you want to see by the speed at which you scroll. And so if you temporarily stop and watch a video, which autoplays almost as soon as you get it into your frame, whether it's mobile or desktop, they're going to record that as a click or, a view. And they're going to be thinking like, okay, this person likes X, whatever the video is about, and they're going to feed more. And even if you spend like 1 or 2 seconds there and then keep scrolling versus even just spending 30 seconds watching an entire video, I mean, it's important. And it counts for marketers, too, because it's like billboards on the expressway, right? You know, you might only see it out of the corner of your eye, but you still know
you're still seeing
it. Beer or Wrigley gum or whatever.
What struck me when I was reading about you in the the muted film. So I'm watching, I think I accounted for 532 of those views of my son's video.
Right. Competing replay.
But at one point I actually turned off the mute and I'm like, oh my God, there's sound on here too. It didn't even occur to me that there was sound on this video. I made the video.
Right.
Watching it. So yeah, I think that's an interesting sort of thing that people should watch.
Well, and marketers have to pay attention to that because they're the ones trying to feed the content, obviously. But I mean, normal people, you don't even realize it until you're like, wait a minute, I don't really need sound.
Just think of slapping a video, and there's so many other things to think about. And I just made reference to recording vertically. Not horizontally. I used to be scolded because I recorded vertically, but now that's the way to go.
No, in fact, advertisers are pushing toward it because, you know, let's face it, people don't like to have to turn their phones to be able to view something. They want to see it vertical. There's more and more studies, and there's another big study probably coming out in the next month or so by a woman named Mary Meeker, who studies this stuff for Kleiner Perkins, a big VC firm out in Silicon Valley. Uh-huh. And, you know, she last year even said, you know, vertical, think about your television is horizontal, but your hand, your smartphone is vertical. But we're moving toward putting vertical on desktops, let alone mobile. I mean, it's really the advance of mobile first. People are thinking mobile first.
So it's all about video, but it still has to be good video.
Yes. Yes, because
I think we think, well, anyone, it's sort of like the Sun-Times for a while gave smartphones to their reporters and had them become photographers.
Absolutely.
Well, they're not photographers.
No.
So if you're going to invest in it and make it do well, you have to work at putting up an effective video.
Certainly once sort of the newness has worn off, like, oh, this was one of those live videos, maybe I should watch it and see what it's all about. And then you watch a couple and you're like, no, these really aren't that good.
No.
So it's like anything else. Quality will out.
But so do you see that when you look at different companies and different entities that they are, I don't want to say they're being cheap when it comes to video, because maybe they think they're doing an effective job, but they just think putting up anything is it's video.
Yeah, and then what's interesting is that I think you're still going to hire video professionals, but the one thing they can do more of is sort of give an authenticity to their customers. They can use, you know, customer appreciation type stuff or people saying, hey, you know, this is what I did. But they have to intersperse it in such a way that it still looks professional.
So does the professional part come in the actual shooting of it, or is it in the editing of it?
I think it's going to be in the editing and post-production, honestly.
All right, putting it together that way.
You know, people can forgive, like, it's something that looks kind of scratchy actually maybe looks more real, but not for an entire, say, 30-second spot, right?
That's John Byrne, the co-host of the Monday Morning Marketing Podcast at WGNplus.com.
With Elise Glink?
With Elise Glink, yes. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming by, John.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to go to the doctor's office at the Walgreens after this on the Business Lunch. Listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, not feeling well, maybe going into a clinic at Walgreens. The staff there, they got a little different look. Beginning this week, Advocate has moved in. They're now calling it the Advocate Clinic at Walgreens. And to talk about that is Dr. Lee Sachs, the Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Advocate Healthcare. Dr. Sachs, welcome to the Business Lunch.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
What's in it for Advocate? Why are you doing this?
Well, this furthers our mission of serving the community. We recognize that access and convenience is critically important, even for patients who have a relationship with a primary care physician. So for low acuity issues, like you said, an earache, being able to be seen without an appointment at your convenience 7 days a week. And for those without insurance, it's low cost, $89 for the simple visits.
And it's better for Advocate as well, because if you see someone at a clinic in Walgreens before they make it to your emergency room, you're providing health care at a lower cost.
That's absolutely right. We see thousands of patients every day in our emergency rooms who have low acuity visits that could be better served in the physician office or in an Advocate clinic. That frees up the emergency room to take care of the truly needy patients there.
It also helps your brand, right? I mean, there's big competition when it comes to Advocate in North Shore or whatever. Tell me a little bit about fighting for market share there.
Well, there's no question having the exposure with the Advocate brand and logo at 56 sites is going to raise awareness. But what we're really excited about is the opportunity for true continuity of care. The nurses will be using the same electronic record and scheduling system that we use all across the Advocate Medical Group.
I'm going to oversimplify this and do it in a crude way, so I hope you'll be patient with me. But, you know, in advertising, they talk about advertising cars on kids shows with the idea that they're planting them the brand, it's someone very young, and that will stay with them. In a way, and there's nothing wrong with it or sinister, if a patient, a prospective patient, sees Advocate in Walgreens and is treated well by Advocate, then when they're looking for a doctor or hospital, that serves you well.
You couldn't have said it any better. We know that about 40% of the patients that visited a Walgreens clinic last year did not have a relationship with a physician. Many of them aren't interested right now, but someday when they are interested, we expect that they'll look to Advocate.
We're talking to Dr. Lee Sachs, the Executive Vice President, Chief Medical Officer at Advocate Healthcare. Do you think that these clinics, like you took over the clinics at Walgreens, do you think this is going to become our new doctor's office?
We see it as an extension of the doctor's office, and that's why it's so important that these are part of Advocate Medical Group with a common electronic record. There certainly are things that we'll do better in the regular physician office, but if the schedule's busy, we'll be able to triage low acuity visits over to the neighborhood Walgreens site for the Advocate Clinic and better serve our patients.
I didn't think of that, so that's an outlet where you might actually direct people rather than have people find it on their own.
Certainly when you get into the busy flu season and the offices get backed up, it would be pretty easy to recommend to Mrs. Smith, gee, we'll have a hard time fitting you in when you want to come today, but you can be seen at the neighborhood Advocate Clinic.
I also want to ask you, because you mentioned the records, that there will now be a uniformity in a way, that's not the right word, but in records. So when you go to Walgreens, the Advocate Center there will have the records that your Advocate doctor has. With so many different outlets and different specialists, sometimes I feel like the continuity of records gets lost a little bit. This helps fix that problem.
This is a big step, and it's been one of the issues that Walgreens has experienced, not just in Chicago, but in all their markets, and recognize that they never could truly integrate care. We have 5,000 physicians and Advocate physician partners who feed all of their electronic health information into a common database. The nurses in these clinics will have access to that. So if you're an Advocate patient and you come to the clinic, we'll be able to know your allergies, your medications, your important diagnoses.
All right, so tell me, 56 Walgreens clinics now. What does the future hold? Will there be, are you going to move into other outlets as well?
I think time will tell. Right now, we want to see how it goes with 56. Walgreens has said that if there's a demand that outstrips the supply, they're open to identifying additional sites. We know that we're going to open a site on the southeast side of Chicago where there hasn't been good access to convenient health care in our Advocate Trinity Hospital service area. Later this year, we expect that to be open, and we'll go from there.
Doctor, one other thing. It hurts when I turn my neck this way. Do you have any suggestions?
I can take you down the street to the local clinic.
Dr. Lee Sachs, the Executive Vice President, Chief Medical Officer of Advocate Healthcare. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.